everybody. Welcome to episode number 214 of the SoxProspects.com podcast. We are the web's number one source for information on the Boston Red Sox farm system from top to bottom, from Fort Myers to Worcester, up the Pike to Fenway, and all stops in between. Thank you for listening. My name is Chris Hatfield. I'm the executive editor of SoxProspects.com, and I'm joined, as always, by our director of scouting, Ian Kundle, who is back in front of, well, I guess when I see you, you're always in front of Fenway Park because you have the background on.
Yeah, and I don't know how to change it right now, so it's kind of stuck there.
Fair. It's funny because you were clearly sitting in a different position last week, and it just looked weird because you were still had the same background.
Yeah, I was like sitting at a desk in a little nook of Airbnb, but we're back now, so
nice.
We continue. We plow. We keep going.
Just like the baseball season keeps going. We're recording this on Monday, June the 21st. There's plenty to talk about with the minor league season in full swing. Promotion season is upon us. And the donation drive for SoxProspects.com is in full swing as well. If you want to support the website, the podcast, what we do at Sox Prospects, there's a couple of ways that you could do so. And we appreciate anyone who's able to step up and help us out and support the site, support the show. One way you can do that is you go to SoxProspects.com/donate. You can make a one-time gift to the site. Could be a token one. We don't care. Any support is more than welcome from all of you who listen, who read, who follow us on Twitter. You're the reason we do this. So when you show us your support, it really helps us out, helps do things like pay for travel and pay for site upkeep, you know, things like servers, hardware, that sort of thing. It allows us to do what we do because, you know, we don't take a salary doing this. This is our hustle that we do for the love of it because you all enjoy reading it and listening to it. So that's one way you can support. The other way is, of course, to support us on patreon.com/SoxProspects. You can pledge a certain amount per episode and get certain perks based on that certain amount. Patrons get earlier access to episodes of the podcast. Sometimes it's a little shorter, but sometimes it's as much as, you know, 12 hours ahead of time. Now that we're weekly, we do have to get these out somewhat timely, but earlier access, a personal shout out, which just as a heads up, we are going to do. We're moving it to the end of the episode because there's too damn many of you now, which is great, and we appreciate it. But we give everyone a shout out at a certain level. You get access to the Patreon game updates. Whenever Ian or myself or someone else from the site goes to a game, we file a short, you know, 5 to 15 minute game update based on what we saw. So you get access to those as well. So again, patreon.com/SoxProspects. And a way you can support the show without doing that is going to Apple Podcasts, rating and reviewing the show. We appreciate it. Helps us get in more ears with the algorithm and whatnot. So that's another way you can support the show. But Ian, let's dive right into the news of the week. And I think The biggest news of the week, Ian, was the return of Tanner Houck. He had not pitched since May the 9th, returned with a very good three-inning outing for Worcester. No hits. I think it was 6 Ks and might have been 7, 1 walk. Pretty good outing off the IL for Tanner Houck.
Yeah, it definitely was. And I think just most importantly, the Red Sox need a pitching depth. You know, Alex Cora has talked about it. Like, they've all made reference to the fact that if they had their ways, you know, they would have been able to rest some starters. They would have had more of, like, you know, six-man rotation at times. And obviously in that 17 games in 17 days they just had, they definitely could have used someone like Houck. Mm-hmm. So it's good to see he's, you know, back on the mound. Obviously it's encouraging that he was a good start, but I think it shows the fact that he only went three innings. He's got a ways to go to build back up to be, you know, yep, in consideration for a starting but role, or, you know, for a call up to the MLB level, unless they decide they want him in like a relief role
or like a piggyback role,
even. Yeah. But like to be a true starter, he needs probably what, two more starts at least, maybe three,
before they would call him up without needing him.
I would, like, say three.
Yeah, in a situation where they could go with like a six-man rotation for a week or something.
Exactly.
I would say maybe two more starts minimum.
Yeah. So that's, you know, he's got to, we need to see him, you know, get through the lineup a few times and stay healthy for a couple weeks. But yeah, it was good
to
see
that. That's the bigger thing for me is just the health, proving he's healthy. You know, the number of guys in MLB this year who've come off the IL only go right back on it.
Especially pitchers.
Yeah, especially pitchers, and especially with this whole thing with, you know, grip substances and whether or not that's hurting pitchers as well. I know Tyler Glass now really made a big deal out of it when he got hurt. So, yeah, that's kind of interesting. Also worth mentioning that Chad De La Guerra also came off the IL, so just another depth infielder in AAA, back off the IL and in the lineup in Worcester. He made his for he played his first game in over a month on Sunday. The other kind of big news in the minors, I think, Ian, was a little not as big of a promotion as the Brian Baio promotion, but something of a chain promotion where Devlin Granberg was promoted from Greenville to sorry, gosh, from si no,
No,
yeah,
you had
from
it right.
Greenville to Portland.
You had it right.
From Greenville to Portland, I second guessed myself. From Greenville to Portland, outfielder Will Dalton was promoted from Salem to Greenville, and outfielder Eduardo Lopez was called up from extended spring training to Salem, which I think you and I both agree that's the most interesting one. Lopez is inside our top, definitely our top 60.
Yeah, he's 41, I think.
Yeah, I was gonna say he's right on the cusp of the top 40, but he's number 41, yeah, on the SP60, as we like re to refer to it. Was the Red Sox's biggest bonus in the international signing period in 2018. He got $1.15 million, which is not a huge amount. I mean, it's more than $1 million, but it's as
Well, I
far as
think
international bonuses go, it's not enormous. But a player who, well, I'll let you get into the quick scouting report, I guess, if you want. But
Oh no, what I was just going to say as a point of context, like Freddy Valdez, who they acquired in a trade a couple weeks ago, got, more money than he did in that same period
sure.
as like a point of reference. Like it was not even, I don't think it was among the top like 40 or 30 bonuses for sure, maybe 40 given out, because Valdez was like the 28th highest bonus at 1.45, I believe. So,
Sure.
yeah.
Yeah, and it's that Salem outfield is kind of interesting right now because honestly, the way we had it on our team roster page, Ian, that I mostly kind of maintain with Mike, I had Gilberto Jimenez in the right field slot and Zidane Rafaela in the center field slot because Rafaela was their primary center fielder. It looks like with Lopez there, Lopez is going to be the primary right fielder. I think that means we're going to see more Jimenez in center and more Rafaela in the infield. I know Nick Northcutt's been struggling a little bit. I think they'd probably like to get Rafaela some work at second as well. And of course, you've always got the DH slot. It's intriguing. Lopez, from what we've heard about him, a guy who doesn't really have standout tools, but just high baseball IQ and the tools play up. I'm wondering how that's going to play in Salem. Among that group where, some of the guys maybe are a little toolsier but have had hit or miss success.
Definitely.
Seeing how that plays in, seeing how he performs there. And I also kind of wonder what this means about Nick Decker, who hasn't played since, I think it's been about a month now. He hasn't played since May the 20th. He suffered a leg strain, was what we were told. And so now we're going on a month. It sounded like they were just being cautious, but now not only are we over a month, but they've called up someone who is in theory taking his spot. Is he going to be out for a minute? So I don't know what that portends for the number 26 prospect on the SP60. Dalton and Granberg college guys who were performing well. I don't know if we really have too much more to add there. Good power with Dalton. Granberg, a guy he's hit since he's been in the system. He's going to have to prove it all the way up, but he was hitting again this year. Good numbers for both those guys. They get promotions. Granberg has been playing every day in the outfield in Portland with Pedro Castellanos going on the IL. Dalton has been slotting in, and I think he's played all the outfield positions in the short time he's been up. But yeah, and I don't know if you got anything to add on those, Ian, or if we should just move along.
No, I mean on Lopez, we had a like report coming out of Instructs last year, and he was of the that group of like DSL slash new signees in the outfield. He was seen as like the most interesting or kind of the top performer. That eliminated, like, obviously Gilberto is a different class, and guys like him, but of like, it was like him, Darryl Bellin, Eduardo Vaughn, guys like that.
Brian
I do think
Gonzalez.
Brian Gonzalez, yeah, Albert Feliz. I do think it's interesting though that he was the one who got the call over those guys, because he's the youngest of that group too. Like guys like Vaughn and Bellin are like 20, 19, and whereas Lopez I think is still 18. I want to say May
That would make
2002.
them
No, he's 19.
younger.
What? No.
You said
What are you talking?
2019 and he's 2018.
No, I said 20 and 19.
Oh, got it. Got it.
Like
got
their
it, got
age
it,
is
okay.
20.
Yeah, I was really confused what you were talking about.
But yeah, no,
fair.
Like he's the youngest of that crew. And so it's interesting. They clearly were comfortable with him. And I guess it makes sense. You know, he was seen as having the most advanced approach, the best batting eye. And so that's kind of lends itself to being able to handle a more aggressive assignment than maybe some of the other guys who are more free swingers. On Dalton, yeah, same thing, just big power, as you said. Be interesting to see how he adjusts to more advanced pitching, but he's still striking out way too much. So in left field only, there's, you know, he's just going to have to hit. And same thing with Granberg. And I'm glad to see Granberg got a promotion because, as you said, he's hit really well throughout his career. And he's almost 26, so he really needs to, you know, get up to the high minors and kind of be pushed as a senior sign a few years ago. So, yeah, some interesting stuff happening there.
Yep. And I think just, you know, looking at what's on the horizon, inevitably when there are promotions, we get asked, you know, who's next, who might be next for promotion. And one guy that we both identified that you kind of pointed out at first was catcher Jax Groshans in Salem, a guy who we went through and determined he's the only catcher taken in the first 10 rounds in 2019. Yep. In 2019, who's in low A, college catcher who got a bonus that's like not a senior sign bonus. So I think it was above 68K.
Which is like, yeah, not
senior
a lot at all.
Bonus, no.
Yeah.
And this is a sample size of, I think, like 10, 15 guys. There was a pretty decent catcher crop that year, college catcher crop.
Mm-hmm.
He was the only one who's not in high A yet.
Yeah, so, and he's hitting. He's been one of the best hitters on that Salem team this year. I think he's hitting like 311, 439, 515. Like,
yeah.
That's, yeah.
And you could look at it and say, well, the Red Sox college catcher that they drafted the prior year in 2018, Cole Cottom, is in Greenville, and there just really isn't a lot of room to move up because you've got Ronaldo Hernandez in AA with Johnny Pareda, and when he gets back from the International Olympic Qualifier, which we'll talk about in a little bit, old Donnie Baldwin. And then you've got the catching situation in AAA, which is Chris Herman and Jet Bandy, a couple of kind of 4A depth guys, along with Connor Wong, who's obviously the primary guy there. But honestly, with the amount that Groshans and Cottom have been playing, they're both playing like 3 to 4 days a week. You know, with three catchers on each roster, they're not playing a guy 4 or 5 times a week at those levels. So you could easily promote Groshans and just have him and Cottom split the reps 50-50. And then I guess you would just demote either Eli or Alan Marrero to Salem, which frankly wouldn't be the worst thing in the world for that staff, because the only catcher down there is Alex Arrow. I don't know how they would work it out. Maybe you draft a catcher, who knows. But at the same time, you want to challenge Groshans. I think, I don't know, you got any further thoughts on him going up, Ian, or if anybody else sticks out to you as a potential promotion?
No, I think that was the most obvious one. And I'm sure there will be others that were coming. Like there's some pitchers that probably could, you know, stand to be promoted. Like guys like Jordan DiValerio in Salem. Like there's not a high ceiling, but there's no real reason for him to be in Salem. Like he's definitely advanced enough to handle Greenville. Mm-hmm. You know, he's someone, or like, you know, maybe if they want to get aggressive, like someone like they think about promoting someone like Chris Murphy, who's, you know, had really settled in his last few starts. His velocity's ticked up. You know, he's 39 innings, but like then again, he was drafted in 2019 and he already skipped Salem. So it's like, it's weird.
Kind of
it's hard to figure it out with like the skipped season.
Exactly. Exactly.
It's how much do you want to give a guy who's already skipped a level? You know, how much time do they need to show that they deserve a promotion there?
Because everyone, like I was in a discussion on our forum with someone who was talking about how quickly Bayo got promoted. And I think I said on there, I think 2020, you kind of have to throw the book out on how long it usually takes a guy to get promoted. Because and it's not going to be based on numbers. This is what we repeatedly say. You can't just scout the box score. Brian Bayo didn't get promoted because of his strikeout rate. He got promoted because the stuff was too good for that level. That's why you move him that quick. Maybe they wind up thinking the same thing with Chris Murphy. It's not out of the realm of possibility. But that said, I mean, he's, you know, for his draft year, I think he's at a good spot. I think if he were going to move up, you know, mid-year. To me, I think that there's a lot of relief pitchers who look like they could move up. You could pick three at each level, basically, who could move up.
And yeah, guys like...
Go ahead.
Yeah. No, I was just going to say, like, yeah, like Zach Kelly, like some of the older guys. Because there's older guys at every level.
Yeah, I mean, in Portland, off the top of my head, the guys I was looking at, it was like Seth Blair, Zach Kelly,
Adames,
and Jose Adames, who's apparently touched 100. He's been their closer.
Yeah, and he's 28, so.
In Greenville, it was who are the guys? Yorvin Pantoja, who I know you've gotten some really good reports on, has been great.
Yep, and he's 23 already. Like, there's just some older guys. Dylan Spak, I think, has been
Dylan
really
Spake.
good.
Yep, Spake's
Spake,
been
is
really
it Spake?
good. And there was one more. Oh, Alex Scherf. I could see them pushing him. He's Rule 5 eligible. Challenge him. I could see them pushing him up. And then in Salem, you've
Yeah.
got guys like Devin Rodal, Brandon
Casey Cobb.
Walter, Casey
It was
Cobb,
like
Cody Scroggins. Like, all
half
those
that
guys have.
Ryan Fernandez, I don't think, has given up a run this year. Like, there's a ton of guys in that bullpen that could get pushed up a level.
And the thing is, they've got the arms and extended who, like, really aren't guys you would pitch in the DSL. Or, yeah, are they not the DSL, the former league formerly known as the Gulf Coast League, the FCL. But you've got guys there like Miguel Suero, Brian Lucas, Osvaldo De La Rosa, Jose Larez. Those guys could easily move up to fill those spots. So I think
Definitely.
it's boring, honestly. I mean, I hate to say it, no offense to those players, but just like, kind of orgy relievers are kind of really the ones standing out right now for promotions. But at any rate, just some other really quick comings and goings. First baseman Jerry Downs asked for and was granted his release. We learned that when he popped up playing for High Point in the Atlantic League, even though we had not heard anything about his being released. But yeah, he's of course Jeter Downs' older brother. Actually, so we from what we understand, he actually asked for his release. Best of luck to him. Hopefully, he's able to sign on with a new another organization. And
Yeah, I mean,
also,
like on independent balls because he's already signed with them, so.
right. Well, I mean, some guys go the indie ball, and they're out of there quickly. So hopefully, he doesn't have to spend too much time there. And then we should mention Ryan Weber's gone, Ian. I will not have fond memories of Ryan Weber, not of his own fault. I think he.
He had a fitting ending to his Red Sox career, I
Oh,
think.
just getting. I mean, it's like taking his lumps. How many runs did he give up? 10 or 11?
11 in like 5 innings or something.
But it was like, I
It
think we
was
called
batting
the.
practice. It was bad.
Yeah, but I think we called it like the best double
I mean, he
digit.
saved their bullpen. Then they
Yeah.
went down to Atlanta. What, they swept Atlanta and they won 2-3 in Kansas City. Like, he did his job. So,
Yeah.
or did they lose 2-3 to
No, I think
Kansas
they lost. I was
City?
going to say, I think they lost too.
But yeah, I mean, it just shows though, it's kind of what we talked about, that teams just need pitchers. Like,
Yeah.
the fact that Ryan Weber is getting claimed, I think, shows that, you know, teams are just really starving for innings, and anyone who can provide length, you know, is someone who that other teams are going to be interested in.
Yeah, and Weber, I think I mentioned, the Red Sox did this thing with some guys where they kind of gave them a sort of poison pill split contract where if he's in the majors, he gets 100, I gets 800K as opposed to the minimum, which is closer to like 560. So I guess the Brewers were willing to deal with that. So he is now gone, and I guess again, let's keep it up at Fenway for a little bit longer. And two things really that stick out in terms of what's going on at Fenway Park. One, you mentioned the catcher situation, so I'll let you kind of intro that and what the deal is with that with Kevin Plawecki and what's going to happen there.
Yeah, so it was something that I was watching the game on Sunday, and Plawecki pulled up limp. I think he was trying to field a throw from center field, and they put Vasquez back in the game, and it got me wondering. It was like, if that's bad, and it looked pretty bad. I mean, the fact that they had to remove him with a looked like a pulled hamstring, that can take some time to heal. And their catching depth is not exactly ideal. Like, in the past, they've had like someone like a Juan Centeno type already on the 40-man roster. But right now, the only other catchers on the 40-man are Connor Wong, who has been back in Worcester for a couple weeks now, and is hitting like .150 with a, you know, .220 on base percentage. And then Ronaldo Hernandez, who's in double A, needs to work on his defense and is not hitting really that well either. So, you know, they're very limited in what they can do catching wise, and if they want to add more, if they need to call someone up, you know, it's either basically, I don't think Hernandez is even consideration, so it would be Wong, or you have to make room for someone like Chris Herman or Jett Bandy, who both have significant MLB experience. And then you get into the question of, well, how do you make room? Because they just claimed Yaxel Rios with that last, you know, 40-man spot. So that means if you're trying to make room, that means you're going to have to get rid of someone. And is that, you know, Brandon Workman, Danny Santana, or Yaxel Rios? Other than those three, there's no real clear like person it could be. So
Yeah, and I mean, before people are screaming Marwin Gonzalez, I think the point is I would DFA Danny Santana five times before DFA.
Oh, absolutely, because at least
Marwin
Gonzalez is playing really good defense.
Yeah.
But yeah, so they're just in a weird spot, and it almost makes me wonder looking at it, like, I don't think I would lose them to add Chris Herrmann for 2 weeks. You know, if the Plawecki injury is bad and they know he's going to be out for a while, then I would get it. But if not, I kind of think you might have to just
Roll
roll
the
with Connor
dice.
Wong
Yeah.
and give him, you know, 2 starts and hope Plawecki's back in 10 days.
Yeah, I think it depends on what's going to. So it, I think it actually might be a couple days before they make a decision, because you can start, you know, I mean, they had the off day today. You can start, right? Yes. Yeah, they're
Well,
off.
no, you can't, though, because you can't have one catcher on your active roster going into a game.
They got Hunter Renfrow. They drafted him as a catcher. That's true, though. I mean,
You have to have a backup catcher. Like, you can't play with.
I think what it is you can call up Wong, right? And if it's gonna be a month, then you go ahead and add Herman to the roster and send Wong down and just say,
Yeah,
hey, we realized on Thursday that he's gonna be 3 weeks.
Yeah.
You know, and the thing with Herman is he's got an opt out on July 15th. And it's a true opt out. I don't know whether he would exercise it, to be honest, but it seems to me like there's a chance you're going to lose him in mid-July anyway. Might it, you know, if I'm okay with adding Chris Herrmann to the roster, because look, they've got guys in the organization that they're going to be making room for, which we're going to talk about in a little bit.
Well, but no, but that is the thing, though, is who do you remove? You know, like,
Like you said, I mean, I'm okay removing Danny Santana.
okay, but then who are you going to call up Jonathan Arauz to fill that
Either
spot? Because you could
Aruz
call up
or Michael
Chavis.
Chavis.
Yeah, I guess that would be the way to do it, probably. Because if it's Workman or Rios, I don't think there's any. Is there another pitcher on the 40-man who's a reliever? I know Hauke is. Phil
It's
Valdez, I guess. You could
yeah,
just call
Phillips
Phil
Valdez,
Valdez
but
back
he
there.
can't come back up until, I mean, I guess he can come back up
Well,
if
no,
someone
he could
goes on the
because
IL.
someone goes on the IL. So yeah, but
But
that
does
would be
it
the
doesn't
move.
have to be a pitcher? I don't think it does.
I don't think so. I think
No.
it can just be anyone. But yeah, so it's just an interesting situation. It's something to monitor to see if they, you know, what they do with that tomorrow, or you know, today when you're listening to this probably.
Or have already done,
Or
but
probably already done, yeah.
yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, I think I wonder at what point we're getting, you know, last year we talked about how with Aruz they wanted him to get everyday at bats, and he's getting them in Worcester right now. But at what point is he, you know, our friend of the podcast, Matt Corey, with his Sox Outsider email, in a recent one, I don't know if it was today's or over the weekend, mentioned he really wants them to DFA both Danny Santana and Marwin Gonzalez and call up Aruz, and I don't know. I think he really wants Duran up, frankly. But not to put words in his mouth. But the problem is that Santana and Gonzalez basically are backups on this team. You know, you're not replacing either of those guys with someone who you want to be playing full time. And that's why I think it's like, okay, Aruz, Chavis, whatever. I'm fine with that. They're depth guys at this particular juncture. I don't want to, you know, DFA those guys and then call Duran up to play 3 times a week. So, and that kind of gets me to the point I wanted to talk about, unless you've got.
It gets us to the question we have on
Oh,
Twitter
okay, that's right. Yes.
from Andrew Meehan, who said, Chris, I'm sure you and Ian may discuss on this week's pod, but it is at the point where sending Duran up early to Boston is no longer a knee-jerk, short-sighted move. 1.006 OPS in AAA. I realize he's assured more playing time there, but it seems he's figured it out. So it kind of playing into what you were saying that. You know, and playing time wise, it probably makes sense to keep him in AAA, but have we reached the point where he's hitting enough that you just kind of say, you know, F it, like the Rays just did? I think it's interesting that the timing of their move, you know,
Yeah, with
they just called up Wander Franco, who's obviously the best prospect in baseball. You know, he was hitting pretty, I don't know if you can bring up his AAA line while I'm going on the spiel, but he was, you know, hitting in AAA, and the Rays are in a little bit of a slump. Their lead over the Red Sox is gone. I think they've lost 6 games in a row. They're hitting at third base and shortstop is just not up to the level that they need, and they're kind of looking for that jolt. And I know the Red Sox have been playing pretty well, but I do think that Duran would be is the equivalent, not obviously talent
Yeah,
wise, but in
right.
terms of
I was gonna say
if you're going to the prospect and you're
pool.
calling someone up to play every day, that would be the Red Sox similar move. And it's, you know, are we approaching that time where they would consider it, kind of like the Rays just decided to do?
Yeah, Franco in Durham was hitting 315, 367, 586 with 7 home runs, 6 triples, 11 doubles, and 39 games.
How many of those doubles and triples would have been home runs at Worcester, at Polar Park?
Right.
Like, honest question. So right. He's obviously hitting better than Duran is.
Well, and he's just a better player. I mean, he's a shortstop.
Yeah.
Who can field the position.
But, you know, as you said, what do you kind of, do you want to talk about Duran and
yeah,
talk
I mean,
about what you're
with the thing that I get to with Duran is I think I'm on board. I don't buy that he's not ready. He's starting to hit the ball the other way. He's had a slump and pulled out of it. Yeah, maybe if the outfield defense isn't there, I'm skeptical of how much better he's going to get on defense over the next month, right? Like, you know, he is what he is in the outfield. And frankly, with the outfield they have, they don't need him to play center. He can play left. Like, you could play Verdugo in center. That's not a problem. So, you know, the question with Duran, who, just to pull his lineup for the season, he is hitting 286, 379, 627 entering tomorrow's games.
And, like, his last 8 games, he's raking.
Yeah, he's in our poll for player of the week. He was a consideration. He's not going to win it. Go ahead.
He's 389, 463, 778 in his last 8 games.
Yeah, so he's been raking, and it's just – I think he's ready, but the problem is, like, you know, who am I in? I am on the Boston Red Sox, and since May the 1st, I am hitting, if I can pull it up, 292, 347, 500.
Well, I know the answer to this, Hunter Renfro. Yeah. So, and the thing is that, and this is the other issue, is I don't think they want him playing center field. And I don't think they want Verdugo playing center field right now either. Like, he's been kind of banged up with injuries. And his defense, I'm not sure if it's leveled out yet, but it was kind of not that great to start the season.
That's true.
And he's been playing a lot of left field. So if you're calling up Duran, you want him playing every day, but that means he's playing center, I guess, or you're moving Verdugo to center.
Yeah.
And does that impact your defense more than, you know, the benefit he will give offensively? I think those are the questions kind of they're asking themselves right now.
Well, and the thing too for everyone, I mean, look at how this year has gone, right? Everyone wanted Franchy Cordero gone. He finally gets sent to the minors.
Well, they wanted Danny Santana up too.
Screaming for Danny Santana to come up because he was raking in the minors and they wanted Cordero options. That happened. Santana has been way worse than Cordero was. Way worse. Other than those first couple of games.
Terrible.
He's
hitting like 125. He's like 6 for 59 or something.
And that's after he came up and hit like home runs in his first 2 games. So, you know, and meanwhile, Cordero is now raking in Worcester and everybody wants him back up. And it's like, this is the same guy.
He's hitting better than Duran is in Worcester right now.
Yeah.
It's not by a significant amount. Yeah, he's hitting like over 400. Right. And he's walking. That's the thing that is so funny about Franchy Cordero. It's not funny. I don't even know what it is. It is funny, actually. Is he goes down to Worcester and, you know, his approach was a major issue in Boston. I think we all agree with that. Mm-hmm. He was, 5% walk rate, 36% strikeout rate. And he goes down to Worcester and he's currently sporting a 17% walk rate and a 21% strikeout rate.
Okay.
377, 484, 714 in about the same number of at bats.
Yeah, like, it's
WRC plus of 211 right now.
I mean,
in Boston, it was 35.
And the thing is, everyone's just like, oh, he's a 4A player. I mean, if you read any of the kind of national reporting, the gap between the major leagues and minor leagues, specifically AAA, obviously, players say it's as big as it has ever been. Look at what Jared Kelenic has done in Seattle. I mean, did he get sent back down yet? I mean, it seemed like it was imminent. He's been awful.
He got sent back 2 weeks ago.
Was it that long ago?
I mean, he was 0 for 42, I believe, or 0 for 37 or something when he got sent down. And he was 9 for 85 around that in his pro, you know, thing.
Yeah, I mean, Kelenic was terrible. You know, Keston Hiura in Milwaukee had to get just got sent back down this week.
Yeah, I mean, hitting is hard. We know hitting is hard at the major league level. And ironically, it's actually been better over the last two. Well, not ironically, we know why it's been better the last 2 weeks because of the kind of start. The sticky stuff has been started to clamp down on, but. Yeah, that's the tough part for the Red Sox is, with Cordero, he's already on the 40-man roster, which I think is another consideration, kind of the same things we talked about. And he has some MLB experience already, but at the same time, as you said, he was terrible when he was up earlier this year. Duran is an unknown, and he's obviously been very good at AAA, but at the same time, he's hitting, 100 points less than Cordero. His strikeout rate is higher, walk rate is lower. Like, it's just an interesting kind of situation they find themselves in. But I think we probably the only thing that I think the takeaway is that I think Danny Santana's days are numbered. I'm not sure he has more than another week on the roster because I just don't see how you can justify keeping him on the roster at the
He's
expense of
playing.
someone like Cordero or even Michael Chavis, who's really hitting in June and Worcester also. Because what is he doing? What does he add to the MLB team? He's not a great defender. Yes, he can play a bunch of positions, but are you comfortable throwing him out there anywhere? Why would he play over someone? Marwin Gonzalez at least gives you the defense. Hernandez is what he is. He's a solid, I think he's a solid, platoon guy, but he's playing every day. They need someone who to play every day, but at the same time, I don't think they're not going to just bench those veterans. That's not the Cora way. So they just find themselves in kind of a weird position, I think.
Yeah, and the thing with Santana, I mean, he in the month of June has made 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 starts in 20 days. So, he's not playing a ton, but he's playing. Gonzalez in the month of June has made 1, 2, 3, 4, 9, 10, 12 starts in 20 days. These guys are getting playing time. So as much as I say, look, replacing those guys with someone you want playing every day is not really the move. They're playing enough to impact the team. So maybe you do want to make that upgrade while you're fighting for first place in the division with the Rays and you've got the opportunity, to sweep the leg here in an important series coming up. If you take three out of, is it a three game series with the Rays? If you take all three games, that's huge. So yeah. All right. You wanted to make one other point, Ian, about you're getting a lot of questions about relievers, specifically Caleb Ort in Worcester. So why don't you go ahead and do that, and then we can wrap up and get to emails.
Yeah, so obviously we saw last week the Red Sox did some kind of churning and burning with that last bullpen spot where they ended up Brandon Brennan was up, Ryan Weber was up in it. They DFA'd both of them. Yexel Rios is now up, and I think he's pitched a couple times. And getting a lot of questions about Caleb Ort, and because obviously he's been dominant down in AAA, and the stuff looks really good. He's up to 96, 98 miles an hour. He's got that little, it's like a slurvy breaking ball that's really good. And yeah, in 20 innings, 0.45 ERA, he's given up 12 hits, one run, 8 walks, 28 strikeouts. And he's cut down on the walks considerably in June, which was something we talked about in May that was kind of an issue. But the problem with Ort that faces Ort, and it's not his fault that he's in this situation, is, and it's, there's several other relievers this would apply to, is he's not on the 40-man roster yet. And in order to add him, they would have to make a move. But if you're adding him and he doesn't stick and you want to send him down, you risk losing him if you want to remove him from the 40-man to try someone else in that spot. And I think it's Chaim Bloom has shown they like having one or two spots that they can just churn and burn through relievers, depending on who becomes available on waivers or who's available for cash considerations. And with someone like Ort, if he's taking up one of those spots, you don't want to risk losing him because he's, actually interesting. And he might not necessarily be someone that they're comfortable, though, putting in their major league bullpen for the rest of the year. So for now, it makes the most sense to just keep him down and churn through that one, that last spot, that Valdez spot or the Yaxel Rios spot, and try several guys out there from outside the organization who, if it doesn't work, you just DFA out them and it's not the end of the world if they get claimed like Ryan Weber. And so I think that's why Ort is not someone who is in consideration now, but obviously that could change. And if they reach the point where they're confident that he's someone that we're going to call him up and he'll stick around, then I think that is when the move would be made and he would be added.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Absolutely perfect sense to me. The last thing that we just wanted to touch on really briefly is the final Olympics qualifier is going on this week. And the Red Sox actually have a number of guys participating, including three guys on Team Dominican Republic when they had none in the Americas qualifier that was a few weeks ago. They have pitcher Raynel Espinal, outfielder Johan Mieses, and catcher slash infielder Roldani Baldwin. The first two are in Worcester. The latter is in Portland right now. And Adonir Mosqueda is listed on the roster for Venezuela, I think, as an alternate. There's no transaction putting him on the TIA, which makes me think he's not actually there. But he's listed at least as an alternate on that roster. We'll see if he shows up on the TIA tomorrow. But yeah, a pretty good turnout from those guys. We'll update after the week is over with how those guys all did. Baldwin played in the Baldwin and Mieses played in the warm up that the Dominican Republic team did against Team Mexico. I want to say Mieses went deep again, believe it or not. So we'll see if he keeps up his string of home runs down there in that tournament. It's down in Mexico, so just another thing to keep an eye on. Ian, shall we get to emails? If you want to email the show, again, the email is podcast@soxprospects.com. Hit us up because we want to talk about what you want to hear about. And our first email comes from frequent emailer Mark Herman. Mark says, so apologies because I'm just now listening to your last podcast and very likely could talk about this on the current podcast. I started this year out with a podcast question that you guys discussed in a preseason podcast, and it was, what do you need to see from Groom to avoid labeling him as a bust? I believe I added levels like just pitch up to pitch well slash dominate. So it feels like he's somewhere in between those. Positive seem to be that his stuff has ticked back up and he's caning guys, but the con is that he's wild and giving up runs. As we near the midway point, I'm hoping that you guys have some updates on him and what you see slash think, encouraging slash discouraging item, encouraging items, etc. We talked about him last week, but I just want to add that Groom started on Sunday and had another outing. I think he struck out 8 in 5 innings.
5 2/3. It was the longest outing of his career.
Yeah, I mean, it's
but he also walked, I think, 5.
Yeah,
four.
It's the trending up. It's the needs to keep it together for longer stretches. But I think generally I'd say I'm a little encouraged by what I'm seeing. It just needs to continue.
It's just inconsistent. You know, the stuff, talking to scouts, I've talked to a few scouts who've seen him over the course of the year, and their reports are radically different. You know, some games he'll have velocity, some games he won't. Some games he'll have his breaking ball, some games he won't. Some games he'll have command, some games he won't. You know, it's just from outing to outing, you don't really know what you're going to get. And, you know, that's the last two outings, he's had 4 walks in each, which is not ideal, obviously. But he's missing a ton of bats, you know. 8 strikeouts in 5 2/3, 7 4 1/3, 8 5, like, he's getting the swinging strikes and missing bats, but at the same time, you know, he's not throwing that many strikes. And that's the biggest thing he's got to work on right now, is just consistency from outing to outing, and then consistency within the outing from inning and inning. Kind of what you talked about last time, where, you know, he'll be dominant for 3 batters, then he'll throw 8 straight balls out of the zone. You can't, that's just the kind of things that just can't happen.
Yeah.
And I think it is encouraging. I think that the most encouraging thing for me is I like the way his pitch count is ramping up. You know, if you look in May, he was 56 pitches, 62, 50, 62, 63. We move ahead to June, he's been 77, 76, 82, and 92 pitches. So they're ramping him up into a true starter's workload, you know, 80 to 90 pitches. And that's what I want to see from him, is just every outing I want to see him out there throwing, you know, 80, 90, maybe, you know, approaching 100 pitches, turning the lineup over multiple times, try and get in deeper into games, because he just needs to make up those innings and just get out there. And so the health is obviously the most encouraging thing, and the number of bats he's missing is, but there's still a lot to work on there.
And one thing I want to mention too, Ian, because we got some questions about this with Aldo Ramirez last week, is we're going to start seeing guys get skipped. Don't freak out if a pitcher misses a start on a given week with no news. It's likely that he's just being skipped. That happened with Aldo Ramirez last week down in Salem. So it wouldn't surprise me if Groom skips a start coming up, but it just came to mind. The rest of Mark's email, next question. The current 30-40 in our rankings starts with Frank German and ends with Sedan Rafaela. Which of those are your pegs for being the next Helium candidate? I'm going with a guy that has his stuff tick up or his bat wake up and put himself in the top 20 or above by year's end. Me, I'm going with Brandon Howlett, and that, in my opinion, is the low-hanging fruit because he feels like he fell less because of his abilities and more because of the massive influx of what I'm coining the Heim churn. I talked about this last week. Someone asked me about it on Twitter. I was so enthused when they got him and helped fix his vision, and he raked. He felt like a steal in the making, and then he struggled. Well, he's raking now and reminding everyone of why he was exciting when he got here. Who else? Ian, is there anyone in that range who sticks out to you as a potential guy to, you know, have some helium? I mean, we we should say, Howlett's probably going to move up from that group. And I think he meant the 31 to 40 range because German's 31. There are guys moving in different directions in that group, I think, is kind of the problem. Pedro Castellanos is 39 and he just got put on the IL and wasn't, he was hitting okay. I think Miguel Blaze might be the guy when the DSL starts if he shows out, but I don't
Yeah,
know.
I mean that group, if you're looking at it, the performance hasn't been great.
No.
Hermont is a German.
That's
Sorry,
true.
German has really, he's figured it out,
He's
his
picked it
last
up.
couple outings.
Yep.
He piggybacked because of a rain out last week, but he had through like three innings, three hits, one run, four or five strikeouts, no walks. So that was encouraging. But yeah, if you look at that, it's an interesting group, and I think Hallett actually is the clear answer, and I don't
Yeah.
think there's anyone that
Well,
close.
I like Rafaela a lot. I like the athleticism. I just think he's really raw. I don't think he's going to move up now. I would say like next year. He's a guy that might have helium.
Yeah, I think Rafaela's problem to me is he's just not strong enough.
He
He's so
needs to get
small,
bigger. Yeah.
and if you look at his stats, he's not hitting that well. He's hitting like 240, 326, 345. So it's like the walk rate and the strikeout rate are really good, 11%, 16%, but he's just not strong enough to impact the baseball right now.
Yeah, if I were buying stock in these guys, like he's not the guy I would go all in on, but I would get some shares, is how I would
Yeah,
put it.
I agree. I like him, and I like Blaze. I don't know how to
I think it's
pronounce his name.
Blaze.
But yeah, the reports on him, just kind of from talking to people, have been, after he signed, that's the guy the Red Sox clearly really like. I think you've heard similar things. They think very highly of him, so that's going to be an interesting one. But yeah, I think Howlett is the one in there, and there's still some concerns. The strikeout rate is 28%. That is way too high. That's problematic. But he's walking again, and the power is coming back. He had eight home runs in all of 2019. He's got six already this year. I think he's homered in his last three games. WRC plus is 156 right now. Like, there's a lot of encouraging signs with him at the plate. It's just he's got to make a little more contact.
But yeah, thank you to Mark, who is, of course, a supporter on Patreon. Our next email comes from Brian in Nevada. And he says, "Hey guys, the trade deadline is approaching, and Marwin Gonzalez and Enrique Hernandez are getting way too many at bats. Marwin should either platoon versus lefties or only bat righty. Enrique has been given a lot of rope and is still hanging near the bottom. Both are valuable in utility roles, but not as starters, let alone batting leadoff. Bobby Dalbec has shown some recent flashes versus right-handed pitching, but can still look bad, really bad much of the time. And the overall production of first base has been lamentable. Here are some trade ideas to address these issues. Would 4.5 years of Michael Chavis bring back half a year of Josh Harrison, who is more of an everyday guy than Gonzalez or Enrique?" No, I don't see anyone. I don't get who trades for Chavis at this point, Ian.
I mean, if the Nationals are out of it, I don't like Josh Harrison's like what, 38, 37? Like, it's not an outrageous request, I think. If you're them, you're not going anywhere. Like, if you're not going anywhere and he's, says he wants to go to a contender, I think that's something in the ballpark that could make sense. But the same thing is the Nationals have someone with Carter Kieboom, I don't know how to pronounce his name,
Kaboom.
Kieboom, who kind of has similar issues to Chavis, and is they they'll I think they're going to want to give it back to him at some point. So yeah, I mean,
Now,
I do
Harrison's
think
33, by the way.
33, okay, but he's older. And I just, yeah, I do think that, I just don't think Harrison, though, if you're going to try and upgrade second base, I'm not sure he's that much of an upgrade over those guys. I think you're going to be shooting for something higher.
He also asks about Kyle Schwarber to platoon with Dahlbeck. He asks about,
Schwarber, I don't understand how Schwarber would work because he doesn't play first base, so.
I don't. I mean, you'd have to teach him. Yeah, he no NB. He's never played first base, being teammates with Anthony Rizzo for most of his career. But as a former catcher, he could probably figure out the footwork and dig throws out of the dirt.
You're not doing that
You're not doing
midseason.
that in a play in a pennant chase.
And Schwarber also would require a lot. He's raking right now. He's
He's,
got like
yeah.
he's got like 18 home runs or something this
Yep.
year, so.
He also asked about Starling Marte, who's got half a year, is currently playing at a 10 WAR pace.
I mean, you're giving up, but they don't.
Would
The
Steven
problem.
Gonsalves or Raynel Espinal or both get it done? No. No, they
The
wouldn't.
Starling Marte, you're probably moving like Jeter
Top 10.
Nouns plus stuff.
Yeah,
Yeah, like.
yeah.
And the other issue is Marte makes so much money that you're going to blow past the CBT, and it's not clear they're going to do that.
And who
So.
was it? Was it Steve Cohen who said, "Look, if you're going to go over the CBT, you don't do it by 1 or 2 million. You just say screw it."
No, exactly. If you're going
So.
over CBT, you do it in the off season and you go over by 30 or 40 million. Like, you don't just in season go over by a little bit. So that's why as the deadline approaches, I think Red Sox fans and just everyone in general, you need to be have kind of tempered expectations that if they're going to be making moves for players, it's likely going to be guys on cheaper salaries.
He also asks about Ketel Marte.
It's same. You're gonna he's long term contract at great
three and
money.
A half
you're gonna have
years.
To give the, you're gonna have to give the moon for that.
I mean, I think that's
they would ask for Casas.
They would
plus
ask for
him.
Casas. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And plus, not just Casas. It would be plus.
Yeah. And he asks, what would you be willing to surrender for a half a year of Max Scherzer? I don't think they're gonna trade for a guy like that because I think
it's the same thing.
Got
the money
Chris Sale coming back,
and the money doesn't work either.
Right.
Like it's just not a realistic option.
Yep. But thanks for the email, Brian. We appreciate it. Our next email comes to us again from Brian, and he says, promising rehab start for Tanner Houck. After watching guys like Garrett Richards fall apart without grip, pitching without grip enhancers, you have to wonder what the situation is in the minors. Are they policing that in the minors? Are guys going to come up to the majors and lose their good stuff when they can't doctor the ball? Or are they already pitching naked down there? It seems like front offices would want their prospects to develop without relying on spider juice or pelican spit. And we actually got another question from Zach that I'll just read now. With all the news swirling that the MLB about MLB rule enforcement and quote unquote sticky stuff, how do you think this affects the other levels of the system? Do you think there'll be a similar reform enforcement of written rules in the minors? I'm just curious about the waves this policing has. Thanks and keep up the awesome work. We don't really know. I would be surprised if it's quite as prevalent.
They've already had four guys who were suspended earlier this year for doing it in games in the minors.
In the minors? Okay. All right.
Yeah, because
so,
they're not part of the unions. So they can just suspend them.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's just, look, I
it
we'll
it definitely
see.
Happens in the minors. Yeah. I don't know if it happens with the Red Sox, and we're not going to speculate on who's doing it.
Sure.
But, you know, I mean, we know of four cases already this year of people getting punished with, I think it was like the White Sox and the Rangers or something. So clearly there are people who are. But, yeah, I mean, we don't know if it's any situation with the Red Sox, and I don't think it's we can't really speculate on
sure.
it.
Our next email comes from Brendan. He says, hey guys, love the work you do. Thanks for the outstanding content. Two quick questions. One, can you explain again why Hudson Potts is already on the 40 man? It's because he was eligible for the Rule 5 draft this past offseason, so they added him to protect him. Number two, what's going on with Anthony Flores? No, I noticed he wasn't even in your top 60, and per MILB.com does not appear to be assigned either. Shouldn't he be in low A? Thanks, Brendan. Flores didn't make the Salem Red Sox is what it comes down to. He is at kind of a precipice in his career. I think it's safe to say, Ian.
And if you've been following the site, it probably wasn't a surprise because we had some stuff on him at Instructs last year that was not very encouraging.
Yeah,
let's just say it. Yeah.
Yeah. He hasn't looked good. The body's backed up. The athleticism is backed up.
He's playing second base only. He's just not, I would be surprised at this point if he gets out of the low minors.
Yeah, I mean, we'll have to see what he does apparently in the FCL, where he'll be on a team with a lot of other infielders. I mean, our current projection, he is starting at second, but he's on a team with Bonacci, who else is there? I mean, no one right now, but they're going to draft guys.
Carson Simas. Yeah.
I mean, Blaze Jordan, Danny Diaz. There's a lot of infielders there, and they're going to add more. So we'll see.
I mean, I would just say it's not a good sign that he didn't make Salem, but it's not surprising.
Yes. And in case that's what you're asking, he's not injured or anything like that, as far as we know. Our next email comes from Ethan. He says, in light of the Eduardo Lopez promotion, there's a whole bunch of unknown from the 2018-2019 international signing classes. Most of these guys fit in the 40 to 60 range or just outside of it in the rankings, except for Brandon Bernassi. What separates him from the rest of that group and has him all the way up in the top 20? I'm fascinated to see the DSL and FCL this year because of the unknown. Get me excited about a guy or two in the bottom third of the top 60 who will be in those leagues. Ian, I'll throw that one to you.
With Bonacci, it was just one of those things that he was the standout infielder at Instructs last year.
And before that, too, he had some helium. It wasn't just Instructs.
Yeah, but I think the biggest thing is the most recent looks we got at those guys, he was the one who scouts identified to us as the top, you know, guy from that group. He has obviously got a long way to go physically, but he's got some athleticism. He got bat speed. He knows what he's doing at the plate. You know, he's got some starter tools that you can build upon for a shortstop. And I think, you know, the Red Sox he's clearly someone they like. You know, he's brought him stateside for Instructs. He's going to make, what is it, the FCL this year. And yeah, it's just, he's got kind of shown the most combination of polish and tools already of those guys to have the highest rank.
Yeah, I mean, the numbers don't jump out at you from the DSL, which, by the way, DSL numbers are, don't pay, give them any mind. It's interesting that he had 18 steals in 26 attempts, but he had 282, 360, 401, so it wasn't like he had a bad year. But just the last two instructs, he was a guy who stood out from both camps is what the word I was looking for is. I'm fighting off a sneeze, and I
I
think I've
believe he was only
succeeded.
at 2020. He wasn't at the previous one.
Is that true?
Don't think so. We don't have it on his player page if he was at the 2019. Oh, no, he wasn't the 2019 one. You're right. I misread it. Yeah, he was. Good call.
Okay, our next question comes from Brendan, and this is an email from overseas across the pond. Sox fan here from Ireland. Chaim Bloom is big on rebuilding the farm system, adding depth, and won't be as quick as Dombrowski to trade good prospects for rentals. But we're facing a 40-man roster crunch this offseason, and I'm wondering if that might make some trades more likely. Obviously, you don't give guys away just to reduce pressure on the roster, but if there's a decent chance the Red Sox may lose a couple of guys to Rule 5 anyway, obviously it would be better to get something back for them. So I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on whether any of the guys we need to add to the 40-man this offseason might have trade value. Could we put together a deal which includes some of these guys, reducing the pressure on roster spots next offseason and helping the Major League team through the final stretch? Cheers, Brendan. Thanks for the email. Thanks for listening over in Ireland. Ian, I think we've kind of talked about this a little bit, but if they do make deals at the deadline, I think that is a pool of players they would be inclined to dip into, either who are Rule 5 eligible or who are on the 40, I think is the other piece of it, because that's just as useful in freeing up roster spots.
Agree. Yeah, that's why I think, like, if you're looking at the 40 man, guys like Marcus Wilson, Michael Chavis, guys like that who might have, some value would be, and Jay Groom maybe would be of interest to team. Jason Rosario had some pots again. It's for those reasons. And then also, working off the 40 man list, yeah, obviously teams are going to be interested in guys like Brian Bayo, players like that. So yeah, definitely. I think that is, you've nailed it, that if they do make some trades, which I assume they will, that that'll be the pool of players they're kind of moving from, because there's definitely guys in there who have value, but at the same time, you might not necessarily, you have some similar ranked guys in your internal projections. If you trade a couple of them, it frees up a spot and you get something back. That's a good piece of business.
Ian, our next email comes to us from Tim about a guy who pitched tonight. Following up on the bit about Jack Leiter demanding a lot of money to fall to the Red Sox, is there anything in place to ensure this isn't abused? This seems like something that can be easily exploited if agents or players want to stay away from certain teams. Thanks, Tim. And just to fill in on background a little bit, I think it was it the FanGraphs, Kevin
Correct.
Goldstein and Eric Langenhagen chat or
That was their
article,
mock
their
draft.
mock draft. Goldstein reported that he's heard, and I think Langenhagen agreed he'd heard the same, that Leiter is floating a large bonus number in order to try and fall to number four to the Red Sox. The idea would be that you float a number to the first three teams and then you give a different number to the Red Sox, which there's nothing stopping you from doing that.
No. I mean, this happens all the time, and and there is a built-in mechanism in place. It's called calling his bluff, and it's happened before at the Red Sox. Funnily enough, we're a team that did it. Jay Groom back in 2016, as I think was it Jim Callis has reported, had a
Said on our
deal,
podcast.
or said on our podcast, had an agreement with the Padres at 24 for over a slot, and the Red Sox basically, and he floated a huge number to the teams ahead of him to try and push himself down to the 24, and the Red Sox just said, no, we're good, we'll take you anyway. And what did he do? He signed, because that's what all those guys do. So if a team one of three takes Leiter, he's going to sign with them, and there's nothing, him or his agent or advisor, I don't know what you're, I think it's advisor, is what we have to call
Technically
them.
advisor, yeah.
There's nothing they can do to stop him, and that's the mechanism of place. It's just, calling his bluff.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm picking third overall in front of the Red Sox and, Leiter's floating a number, I'm going to say, fine, I'm going to draft you if he's the guy I want there, right?
Correct, yeah.
I'm going to
That's
offer him a little bit more than slot for the next pick. And I'm going to say, do you not want this? Because guess what? If you want to go back to school, then fine. I'm going to get this pick basically again next year. I'm going to be picking fourth.
well, and that's the thing, is like for pitchers, there's so much risk in going
Why
back to school
would you
that
not take it? He'd be
exactly.
nuts. He'd be
Exactly.
absolutely
So, which is
crazy.
why that if a team wants to take him, in the top three, then they will.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, but it's a fair question because it's definitely a thing. But that's the point of a draft is so that doesn't happen. It prevents that
Exactly.
because you've got one team you can negotiate with.
Well, and I do think that it was more of an issue back in the day under the
Yes.
old system with no limits
With no
because
caps, yeah.
you really ran into situations where teams, a team could offer like $2.5 million in the 15th round, and a guy would be like, yeah, obviously I'm going to take that
Right.
over, So it was a little different back then, but now with the slotting system, it's more, teams will just call someone's bluff. And I think another one that was reported or not reported that was floated recently was Nick Bitzko last year. I think it was on MLB Pipeline's podcast they discussed it. Might have been Fangraphs guys that Bitzko had a deal with someone in the 30s. I want to say it was the Reds or someone, and the Rays just were like, okay, we're taking you anyway. And what did he do? He signed and then he blew out his shoulder because that's what pitchers do. So that's why you sign, but it's also, why if guys will do that and it doesn't always work.
Yeah. And then actually, Ian, we just got an email while we were recording from our Patreon supporter Aaron Mehta. It's kind of detailed, so Aaron will get to that next episode. It's an interesting email. I just forwarded it to you, Ian. So we will get to that one next episode. It's about a piece that Keith Law wrote on The Athletic that I haven't had a chance to look at yet. So I didn't want to talk about something I had not yet read. So we will get to that email next week. And again, it's podcast@soxprospects.com if you want to shoot us an email. And I think that's going to do it unless you've got anything else, Ian. You're good? All right. Well, we want to thank everyone who listened to the show. And we want to thank our supporters on, again, the donation drive is going. Soxprospects.com/donate, or you can support us on patreon.com/soxprospects. And you can join our ever-growing list of Patreon supporters. And we always want to give a shout-out to our $5 level Patreon supporters. That's Kyle Costigan, Tyler Woodrall, Jeff Traynor, David Nardone, Tim Harding, Bill Stanton, Deb Kendall, Evan Kirkwood, Hurricanes One, Chris Fox, James O'Hara, Nathan Kenyon, Andrew Wallen, David B., Ben Burnett, and Al Mendel, Kevin Katrides, Ben NRI, Paul Denyer, Lendl Martin, Cassandra Buchta, James P. McMahon, Stephen Gregory, James Bailey, Andreas Gullstrand, Corey Perrick, Forrest Perkins, Mark Herman, Aaron Mehta, Jeff Harwood, Jimmy Mountain, Brian Cowan, Dusty G., Pavel, Jordan Shabbat, Michael Murphy, and our two newest $5 level patrons, that's Jeffrey Scuggs and Nicholas Steropoli. I think I got that right, Nicholas, but hit me up if I didn't. I even Googled it before the show because I've screwed that up with names so many times. So thank you to all of them. Thank you to Joe, Podcast Joe 2.0, who produces and edits our podcast and puts it up for your listening pleasure. Follow us on Twitter. Go follow the site at Sox Prospects. You can follow that handle on Instagram as well. You can follow Ian at Ian Cundall. That's IANCUNDALL. And you can follow me at SP Chris Hatfield for all the goods on Twitter. Anything else, Ian? I think that's about it. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We'll be back at you next week with another terrific episode of the SoxProspects.com podcast, or at least something approaching it. Thanks a lot, y'all. In the hands, envy of angels with the handles, but